idea of hearing no evil and seeing no evil and speaking no evil, you may have wondered why it is that as we think about those three things, it usually is attached to monkeys. That's because, brethren, for over 400 years, we've been doing that due to that carving right there in a shrine to some foreign deity in Japan. The close-up of it, of course, is right there. That was first proposed, I guess, or immortalized, if you will, in the artwork there, that we should hear no evil, we should speak no evil, and we should see no evil, was suggested over 400 years ago as sound advice in conducting your affairs in this life. And it is. The Bible teaches, you know, that sort of thing itself. But this this three-part idea really caught on, brethren. You'll find people doing that in Iraq. You'll find people doing that in Turkey. You'll find that it's in Sydney, Australia. You'll find in Barcelona, Spain. You'll find in New York City. You'll find in San Francisco. You'll find in Pasco, Washington. And yes, brethren, for a mere $17.81, you can find it for sale right up the road in Cottage Grove as well. Which is only to say that some ideas really catch on. Some ideas are easy to remember, you know, and they then get set down in our common cultural, you know, consciousness, so that hearing no evil, seeing no evil, and speaking no evil has, for now quite a few centuries, been very deeply embedded in our minds. And as I've said, the Bible does, in fact, teach those things. Teaches that each and every single one of us should, first and foremost, looking into the medical profession now, you know, do no harm. We should not be saying anything that hurts anyone else, and we ought not then to try to take in through our ears or through our eyes those things that are detrimental to either us or the cause of Christ, which is far more important than we individually are. If you were to open to James, but I don't necessarily suggest it right now. I'm just going to flash it up here. I'll be going to Psalms in a moment. Please do open to the book of Psalms. But, you know, we'll see this idea in James chapter 3, verses 2 through 8. I've just put a little bit of it there. But we all stumble in many ways. The world's full of stumbling blocks, and we're tripping over them, you know, with great frequency. But if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. As I say, you should read the rest of it, you know, on another occasion. But right here, let's think about this. If you were able to bridle the mouth, and this passage suggests that you never really will, but if you could 100% control the mouth, then you could 100% control the entire body as well. The most difficult instrument that God has built into our fleshly bodies is the tongue. It is arguably the most powerful instrument that we have in our bodies. With it, we can do more good or we can do more harm than with our hands or with our feet or any other part of this instrument that we live in for such a little while here in what we call life under the sun, thanks to Solomon's identifying it that way. We all stumble, brethren, in many ways. But it's the tongue, it's the mouth, that's the biggest problem that we've got. What we're going to be contemplating this morning is whether or not really it is as simple as it has become embedded in our consciousness that we should just simply never speak any evil. And if I just don't speak evil, you know, then I could bridle the whole body. If I just never spoke evil, then I would be fulfilling James' responsibility here to take care of my complete responsibilities with regard to both my mouth and to my body. I'm going to suggest, brother, that maybe is not necessarily so. Because in the book of Ecclesiastes, we are also told that there is an appointed time for everything, and there is a time for every event under heaven. There is a time to be silent, indeed. But there is also a time to speak. And so for 3,000 years, from the time of Solomon, the preacher, the wisest man who's walked this earth, this man who gave us the book of Proverbs that we spent a whole year studying, this book of Ecclesiastes, which has some practical advice as well on how to conduct our affairs in this life, suggests there in those last two lines that it is not just, you know, enough, it's not adequate that you speak no evil. One ought not to speak evil, but there is a time to speak as well. And if we were to conduct our affairs throughout our entire lives, only like the monkeys from Japan have suggested, and so we just keep our mouths shut, Solomon would suggest, brethren, that we had not fulfilled our responsibilities. We'd only be about halfway there now, wouldn't we? Because there would be a time to speak as well. And it is those times to speak that we'd like to think about this morning. Now, please open to Psalm 32, as you see on the screen. And we're going to be reading these first five verses there. This is a psalm that we've already talked about. It was on the 7th of July. We spent entire lesson time on the 32nd psalm. We'll primarily be looking in the 39th psalm, as a matter of fact, here in just a few minutes. But we want to see the ideas in both of them here this morning. The first five verses of Psalm 32. How blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. How blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, in whose spirit there is no deceit. When I kept silent. Now in this case, if you're looking at your Bibles there, you'll note that I have in mind at least three italicized words that have been added there. And whenever in your Bible you see an italicized word, that the publishers there, the printers, are helping you to appreciate the words in italics, not in the original text. They weren't actually written in the Bible. They've been supplied by the translator to help us to understand a Hebrew expression in this case, or Greek one, in the New Testament. And ordinarily, they're really very helpful. I'm not particularly crying out about this one at all either, but just that you know, what he said was, when I kept silent, my body wasted away. Now, sin's going to be introduced here. I think it is sin that, you know, he's talking about. Sin's okay to introduce it with the italicized words there. It was sin he was talking about it in verses 1 and 2. So it's not that they did something wrong, you know, inappropriate. But maybe the thought was a bit more general even than just being located in a consciousness of sin. What he said was, when I kept silent, my body wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night, your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was drained away as with the fever heat of summer. I acknowledged my sin to you, and my iniquity I did not hide. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. So I'm agreeing completely with David in Psalm 32, as I'm sure you will as well, that we should never be silent before our God with regard to our own personal sins. David's idea there, certainly in the context of sin before and after, is if you try to just contain that, if you try to conceal that, if you try then to compress it within you and just, you know, keep it within you, you are destroying yourself. You will eat yourself up with guilt primarily and maybe a number of other problems, but you'll waste away physically. This God has built into us. Our conscience is a very powerful thing. It is designed to cause us problems, to make us feel bad, and to have both an emotional and a physical impact on it. When David tried to conceal his sin, he just withered. He just wasted. We spent a lot of time on that in Psalm 32. Let there be none among us who name the name of Christ, who try to excuse or rationalize away or somehow, you know, just ignore that when you have sinned, you need to admit that to your God. You need to reveal that to Him. You need to acknowledge that. You need to confess that. You need to repent and express to Him your desire to turn away from that. That's true. But let's not forget, brethren, that while sin is an integral part of this passage, there are times, thanks to Ecclesiastes we've already learned, that being silent about other things would be a problem too. It's not just when I'm silent about sin that I'm going to have issues. There might be other times as well. when I need to open up my mouth and let something out. So now let's turn to Psalm 39. Don't let 32 get too far away. If you want to hold trigger or put a ribbon there, you know, we'll be right back to that in just a minute. But in Psalm 39, let's look at these first three verses now. David, again, the author of both of these psalms, says this. He said, I said, I will guard my ways, that I may not sin with my tongue. I will guard my mouth as with a muzzle, while the wicked are in my presence. I was dumb and silent. I refrained. But look at that. It delights me to see how many heads are looking down at the text, you know, whether in your iPad or however else you're looking at it. But, you know, in verse 2, he makes it apparent that this guarding of verse 1 and just not sitting with his mouth and the idea of a muzzle, you know, got in his mind to become so prominent that it says in verse 2, I was dumb, I was silent, I refrained even from good. And my sorrow grew worse. My heart was hot within me while I was musing. The fire burned. And then at the end of verse 3, what does he do? He let it out. It's broader here in this passage than maybe it was apparent in Psalm 32. But there is not supposed to be any silence when it comes to the evil of the world about us. Here, when David was holding his tongue before God in Psalm 32, he was wasting away. But when he was holding his tongue before evil people in the world, just the folks that he would bump into on a daily basis, he had a similar problem. He says when he refrained from good by being silent, that his sorrow grew worse, his heart was hot within him, while he was musing the fire burned, and it's the very same idea that you had in Psalm 32, only this time he realizes, I really must let this out. I cannot contain my words for other people's sake. When I see evil in this world, when I see that there's sin out in this world, it is not enough for me to just say, okay, I won't participate in it. I will separate myself from it. I'll build a wall and I'll erect, you know, a fortress, and I'll make sure that I just get back as far away from sin as I possibly can be. And by the time, brethren, you back yourself into that nice safe corner, but haven't said a word to the sinners that are out there in that world, then hopefully, like David here, and like Jeremiah after him, there'll just be a fire in your bones. Can't stand it. This should not just be allowed to ride. And it is not sufficient. It is not pleasing in the sight of God. And I can feel it within myself. It's not healthy for me to just hold it all in and say nothing. The sins of this world need to be addressed. People who name the name of Christ, just like David in the Old Testament, brethren, need to rise up and speak, not guilty, if you don't. You're here for a reason upon this earth, and it is to reveal the glory of your God and the life that you lead, but it is also, brethren, to lead others out of a life of sin. Now, I had an experience yesterday that just absolutely blew my mind. And at first, it just really made me mad. And on one level, it still does. Okay. But on another, I got to give credit where credit is due. So here's what happened. I got to set this up just right. John and I made a speed run up to overnight run to Washington yesterday. She's a grandma. I'm a grandpa. We can only stand so much time away from the grandkids. You can understand that. She got out of work yesterday. We drove 5 hours up to Washington so we could spend only about that many hours with the grandkids, and then we turned around and drove back 5 hours on the overnight trip. So yesterday, at just about 2 o'clock, we came out of a restaurant with our two sons and one daughter-in-law, you know, and three grandkids and the girlfriend that, you know, goes with the other one. We had quite a troop. We came out of the restaurant, and the two little grandkids, the older girls,
jumped up on a park bench that was just 3 or 4 feet away from the bumpers of the cars that had pulled in the park. So as we were walking out the sidewalk, a big troop of us, you know, it was two little girls jumping up on the chair, and then we turned around, and they wanted to jump off the way Dad had been doing the night before, which is, you take a hold of their hands, and when they jump, you just pull them up into the sky, you know, and let them come down. So they get the big leap, you know, help me fly. So they look out there, they wanted to do what we were doing yesterday. Don and I were running late. We all had stuff in our hands that we were carrying. I had some cameras and wallets and stuff, you know, Don had some things out here. Well, but you know, we all of us couldn't really do it. We had only one hand loose. We were already walking, the kids were hanging back behind, so I said, no. I don't think that was a big sin. I've done this before, I've helped them fly, but on this occasion, I chose not to. I didn't want to put the camera down and go through this whole thing. We did do it last night, so I said, okay. And so, we went to the park. I took about 2 steps, and I went down next to a car, and in the driver's side window was down, and in the passenger side was apparently a kind-hearted grandmother who began to tell me off. And I couldn't believe it. I thought she was joking. It was the first statement she made, and then the second I realized she was dead in earnest and telling me off that as a grandfather, it was my responsibility to give that girl a flight. I went to the car in humiliation and shame. You know, but a little bit angry too. How dare you tell me how I ought to behave with my own grandkids? What do you know? You know, I just did. I bristled a little. But at the same time, I had to appreciate it. She spoke out when she thought she saw something that wasn't right. You know, you gotta give her high marks for that, don't you? That was none of her business. How I relate to my grandkids is nobody's business but mine. But how God relates to this earth and how we relate to the lost, brethren, that's our business. It was David's business. It was the apostles' business. And it's our business. When we see sin, if you don't speak out, nobody else is going to. That is our job. So, brethren, what he's saying in these opening verses was what he had also said back in chapter 32. It's what Jeremiah would say. It was the ethic that drove Christianity to the farthest and remotest reaches of the earth. The realization that we must not remain silent, that we dare not remain silent, that ours is the responsibility and the mission before God to speak out. Don't be silent all the time. In verses 4 through 6 of Psalm 39, he says, Lord, make me to know my end. And what is the extent of my days? Let me know how transient I am. Behold, you've made my days as handbreadths, and my lifetime is nothing in your sight. Surely every man at his best is a mere breath. Surely every man walks about as a phantom. Surely they make an uproar for nothing. He amasses riches and does not know who will gather them. What you do about nothing? How Shakespeare would put it, I suppose. So, brother, what these verses are saying to us, though, is that we should really be motivated to speak out, because you will face a judgment one day, and you've only got a very little while to prepare for it. And you have no idea how much longer you yourself will live, nor that individual that you are being given the opportunity by God to influence whoever they may be when you bump into them. This is your chance. This is your moment.
These are your 15 minutes of fame as far as that individual is concerned, at least. And so here's the motivation to speak. Brethren, the time is really, 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 really short. And man, at his best, is just a breath. He's just a hand breath. He's just a phantom. We're just so insubstantial, which is a way of saying that the earth and all that it contains is just so insignificant. It's so very tiny. Don't be obsessed with it. Don't be possessed by it. Don't be concerned about it. Don't be afraid of it. Stand up as representatives of the eternal, truly omniscient and omnipotent God and speak when you see evil in yourself or in others. Speak. We are, brethren, in a very real sense, the mouth of God today. He reveals himself in the Scripture, but it's the only way he's revealed himself, unless his words are expressed by you and by me on a daily basis. Verses 4 through 6 give you powerful incentive to get out there, to speak up, to speak out, and to do so frequently. Now, crisscrossing, so back to chapter 32 again. And it's Psalm 32 now, read verses 8 and 9. We did this back on July 7th, but let's do it again. I will instruct you and teach you in the way which you should go. I will counsel you with my eye upon you. Do not be as the horse or as the mule, which have no understanding, whose trappings include bit and bridle to hold them in check. Otherwise, they will not come near to you. David had set himself not only to confess personal sin and to oppose others' public sin, but he had set himself to speak the truth, to be an instructor, to be a teacher. He was as highly motivated as anybody could be. You know, wrote who knows how many psalms. I guess I could count one of these days. I better, but a lot of them. Just so he could not only express his own appreciation for his God, but to write words that would cause others to pick up these songs and sing, express, vocalize how they felt about their God, how they felt about God's workings with them and with others, to get out and reveal the truth. That's what Psalm 32 verses 8 and 9 is all about. Energetically instructing every opportunity that you have. I hear the passage is often used as a bludgeon. I know that. And I don't intend it that way at all. And nonetheless, it's pretty sobering in Hebrews 5, 11, and 12. Concerning him, we have much to say. Man, it's hard to explain since you've become dull of hearing. For by this time, you ought to be teachers. You have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God, and you've come to need milk and not solid food. Now, brethren, I know that almost exclusively this verse becomes, you know, the hammer in the preacher's hand to be pointing out at the audience and saying, you know, we need more teachers in the kids' classes, and you're not doing this. And I'm wondering, brethren, if that isn't any more than maybe 50% of the problem here. And brethren, the problem was they needed more teachers. They needed someone to teach them again. Is this not also saying that the teachers they had were not getting the job done? And this is much an indictment of me as a preacher, you know, as it is of the audience too. But is it not a fact before God, Old Testament or New, that everyone to varying degrees and differing capacities is to be a teacher? And you just run out of time. There's a clock ticking, you have no choice. At a certain point, you're supposed to be a teacher. And if you're not, it's a problem. And it might be a problem for the teacher themselves. They didn't do a very good job with you. It might be it's a personal problem. You didn't apply yourself very well. But that is a very sobering verse. The realization that God has an expectation, universally, all saints, to become instructors, like David was saying, clear back in the Psalms. Once more in Psalm 32, look at verses 10 and 11. Many are the sorrows of the wicked, but he who trusts in the Lord loving kindness shall surround him. Be glad in the Lord, and rejoice, you righteous ones, and shout for joy, all you who are upright in heart.
I'm afraid preachers like myself, using verses like Hebrews 5, 11, and 12 as a bludgeon, have beaten a lot of joy out of people. Years have gone by, and they just feel like, you know, all I ever hear is where I'm fouling up. You know, I don't think any preacher really intends that. And my apologies, you know, when it comes out that way, you know, it shouldn't. This thing called Christianity, the greatest joy that can be known in this life. Now, there's some mighty great joys in this life. I had two sons. I was present for the birth of the first one, didn't make it for the second one. I had to do that on my own, but I was driving as fast as I could, you know, to get there. But if you're there when a child comes into this world, that is truly an overwhelming experience. It's a joyful day when you get married before that. It's a truly joyful day when the kids get married after that. I performed one wedding for my oldest son already. Now that's a day of joy, isn't it? Let that thing out. The brethren, these joys really ought to pale next to the realization that the God who created all things calls to us personally to share in his nature as a purely spirit being, and therefore throughout eternity with him. That he is calling us to be so like him that one day we will shed the flesh and all the petty concerns about this life and spend an eternity with him. Here truly is reason to rejoice on the day that you are baptized into Christ. As we remember that Ethiopian going on his way, rejoicing. And going on that way, brethren, every day throughout the course of the rest of our lives. We not by rights to be the happiest people on planet Earth. Really should be. And that's what this is about. He says, shout for joy. And yes, I think David meant, you know, full volume when you sing my song. Well, great. When you get in the assembly, you know, sing loud. Sing poorly. But sing loud. Poorly's good, as long as it's loud. But just sing. You know, the rest doesn't come in, does we can't even get it up there. No. But I think it's more than that, too. It's to recognize, brethren, that our joy should be seen and felt and understood by everybody around us. That we're different. And we're happier. And when terrible stuff confronts us, we're not dealing with it the way people do who have no God. The way people do who are worried about the things of the earth, you know, to the exclusion of the things of the Spirit. Don't be silent in the wide world out there about the joy you have found in being a Christian, a child of the living God. And then, back to Psalm 39 now, looking at verses 12 and 13. 39, 12. Last of Psalm 39. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear to my cry. Do not be silent at my tears. We may spend a lot of time in silence, but it's a real bad thing if God does. We don't want him to be silent. And so don't be silent at my tears, for I am a stranger with you, a sojourner like all my fathers. Turn your gaze away from me, that I may smile again, before I depart and am no more. Now, this needs just a word of explanation. Turn your gaze away from me. What's going on here is that David is recognizing that his sins are ever exposed to his God. He wants forgiveness. He's praying for his God to respond. And, you know, and to turn your gaze away is, you know, in the sense of, you know, I know that what I've done is wrong. Now, you know, yesterday, I'm never going to forget it, probably the day I died, but I spanked my youngest granddaughter for the first time. There's a moment in every papa's life. And I told Donna, you know, about how amazing it was. She couldn't cry at first. She just looked at me. What has just happened here? Well, she's only 3 years old. She needed
destruction. So I snapped her. Not that hard is all it was. A little bit of a sting, you know, one swat. She disobeyed me. She hadn't done what I told her to do. But it's the gaze that you read about here that I saw yesterday. She was looking at me and I was looking at her. And she knew she had done wrong. I had told her to come to me and she kept walking. I had told her when she went into that bathroom to come back to me and she didn't do it. And then she shut the door. I told her through the door, you're going to be in big trouble if you come out right now. And there she stood on the back side of that door. A few minutes later, she was just testing Papa. She opened that door and she came back out. She was looking at me and I was looking at her. She walked across the room and I was looking at her and she was looking at me. Okay. And what she wanted was for that gaze to what? To be turned away. She wanted that sin to be, you know, forgotten. She wanted it to be ignored. She did not want me to be aware of it. Brethren, the point of the verse is, as fearsome as it is to be in the presence of God, do not fear it. Pray often, pray long, pray hard, pray fervently and effectually, and it will avail much. So sometimes it's hard and you come before your God and you know you're as guilty as little Kate was yesterday, but you know, Lord, forgive me. I will still approach your throne and seek your help. So condensing and kind of rephrasing and just summarizing in both of them, what we've seen today, brethren, is this. Confess your sin. Don't just cover it. Confess it. Condemn the world's sin. Don't just ignore it, but speak out against it. Brethren, express your joy. Let everybody else hear about it. You want them to know, because it is the best life that can be lived. And then pray like crazy. Now, one more thing, too. Well, we're thinking about monkeys. Brethren, those little organ grinder guys, you know, all they're doing is turning the crank. Who's doing all the work? It's the monkey. Get all those coins and do all the climbing and bring them back, you know, and all the rest of that. My point here is okay, so over 400 years, in the picture of monkeys, you know, we have had a very negative kind of an approach. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do that. What you find is the balance, thanks to Solomon and Ecclesiastes, which you find in David is a balance as well. There is a time to speak as well as a time to be silent. So that's part of the work. We're all just a vapor, just a phantom, just a hand breath, you know, we're just here for a little while and vanish away. Why you're here? Why you're here? Work like the organ grinder's monkey, brethren. Be loud about it. Not offensive, not intrusive. Be present. People know that you're there and they're going to have to deal with it. That a Christian has come into their presence, this is the best way you can lead your life and they're calling to you, come and be a part of it. They're doing the work of God, which is more than just hearing no evil and seeing no evil and speaking no evil. It is also sallying forth to engage all evil, to defeat all evil. And this is done, brethren, with the mouth unto salvation. Romans 10. If we can help you in that endeavor, if you are ready to confess with the mouth Jesus as Lord unto salvation, Romans 10 verses 9 and 10, if you are ready to be washed in his precious blood in a baptism for the forgiveness of sins, if you are ready to begin that walk today, if you need help with it in Bible study, some help that we can offer in prayer, say so. Say so. Come and speak with me, brethren, as we stand and sing.